The Nutcracker has become a treasured holiday classic, but that was not always the case. After the collaboration between Tchaikovsky and Marius Petipa, which resulted in the creation of The Sleeping Beauty in 1890, the director of Russia's Imperial Theaters commissioned Tchaikovsky to make an evening's entertainment that would include both an opera, which would become Iolanta, and a ballet. Tchaikovsky once more turned to Petipa, who was a dancer, pedagogue, and a choreographer, and who is now considered one of the most influential choreographers in the history of ballet. Petipa chose for the ballet's source material an adaptation of a story by E.T.A. Hoffmann, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. The adaptation, written by Alexandre Dumas, was titled The Tale of the Nutcracker. The plot had to be streamlined for the ballet, for example, a lengthy flashback that included a tale within a tale of how the prince was transformed into the Nutcracker, called The Tale of the Hard Nut, was edited out. The original production was not a success. Tchaikovsky created a 20-minute suite from the ballet that became very popular, but the ballet did not become the holiday tradition we know until the late 1960s. You can see the Nutcracker on stage at Friends University from December 9th to December 17th, on stage at the McPherson Opera House on December 10th and 11th, and at Century 2 on December 16th and 17th, produced by Ballet Wichita, and the Hip Hop Nutcracker on December 20th at the Orpheum Theater.
Support for this podcast comes from the Monarch in historic Delano, featuring over 250 craft bourbons and whiskeys, available neat or in a seasonal cocktail. Full bourbon menu at monarchwichita.com.
And as we welcome you to On Stage today, talking about the Nutcracker, we of course have Sanda Moore Coleman with us. Hi, Sanda.
Hi, Fletcher.
And really, my very first question is, you say that this didn't become popular until the 1960s. Tell me what it was about the 1960s, about right then, that actually made this popular.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back to the very beginning of things, because if anything, the Nutcracker is a ballet that has changed and stretched and shrunk to fit a variety of times. It's based on the original 1892 libretto by Marius Petipa. The story itself, though, it is different from production to production, although most of them do follow the basic plot line. The names of the characters vary. In the original E.T.A. Hoffmann story, for example, the young girl is called Marie Stahlbaum, and her doll is Clara. In the adaptation by Dumas, on which, Petipa based his libretto, her name is Marie Silberhaus. In other productions, her name, for example, in Baryshnikov's production, Clara is Clara Stahlbaum instead of Clara Silberhaus. So, like Swan Lake, there have been various endings created in the productions that were after the original. So, it's a very malleable. It has been a very malleable source, a ballet. But in the beginning, if we go back to the very beginning, we go back to E.T.A. Hoffmann, and he published The Nutcracker and the Mouse King in 1816, and he put some of his own experiences in it. For example, he built a cardboard castle like Drosselmeyer does in the story, and he published the story in a children's Christmas book and didn't really think that anything would come of it. Well, something did come of it. What happened was, let's talk a little bit more about E.T.A. Hoffmann, because he is an interesting guy. He started out in life as Ernst Theodor Wilhelm Hoffmann, and he changed his name to Ernst Theodor Amadeus Hoffmann.
Of course.
Because he had great admiration for the composer. And in fact, he loved music. He thought music was the most romantic pursuit in life. And later in his life, when he was teaching piano, he told a young woman with whom he was smitten that he had been named after Amadeus Mozart. So you can see that he was romantic both with a capital R and a lowercase r.
You know, he could have just kept the W and made himself Wolfgang.
Well, I guess he didn't think about that, if only. So at any rate, E.T.A. Hoffmann had a reputation. He was a pioneer in the genre of fantasy. He liked macabre. He was, you know, into realism, but he was a little on the melancholy side. So he was a good representative of German romanticism. E.T.A. Hoffmann apparently influenced people from Kafka to Baudelaire to Dickens to Poe, but he was also known for his musical criticisms. And in his story, Marie Stahlbaum's favorite Christmas toy, the Nutcracker, is animated, comes to life, and defeats the evil Mouse King. And then he takes her away to a magical place with populated by dolls. So that's where we leave E.T.A. Hoffmann. Then what happens then is it's picked up by Alexandre Dumas' pair. So in 1844, Dumas retells the story of the Nutcracker and the Mouse King. It's not a translation. You know, it really is a retelling. And he sticks to most of the details. And it's his adaptation that the director of the Imperial Theater comes across and thinks this would be a good follow-up to The Sleeping Beauty. The Sleeping Beauty was a huge success. They wanted to repeat that success, so they wanted to use the same fellows who made it, Tchaikovsky and Petipa.
So this story was kind of foisted upon Tchaikovsky and Petipa. It wasn't exactly their decision.
It was suggested to Petipa, and he wrote the libretto, and he gave very precise instructions to Tchaikovsky, you know, even down to the tempos and how many bars there should be. You know, who knows what Tchaikovsky thought of that. I'm sure he wasn't thrilled. But Petipa found that it transferred well from the book to dance and to the stage. And so it started off well for him. But then this is what happened. Petipa came down with a skin disease that was so severe. It gave him such pain and such, you know, wild urges to scratch that he had to back out of the season for the Imperial Ballet's entire 1892-1893 season. And so it's mostly some acceptance in history that Petipa's second-in-command, his protege, his second ballet master, was responsible for much of the choreography in the Nutcracker. And the critics did not enjoy it. Many of the critics considered the work, they didn't even think it was a ballet. They thought there was too much emphasis on spectacle and less on drama. And that was made even less acceptable by the fact that the prima ballerina's role was cut down to just the grand pas de deux in the last scene, and people were outraged. They thought, well, this is not a ballet at all. Some people said the choreography is terrible; only parts of it succeed. And the parts that succeeded, the critics said, were only the ones in which Lev Ivanov, the second ballet master, copied the choreography of Petipa's work from other ballets. For example, one critic mentioned that the Waltz of the Snowflakes is almost identical to a waltz from a ballet by Petipa in 1879 called The Daughters of the Snows. So
self-plagiarism in ballet.
They hated it. The libretto was criticized for being lopsided. They said it wasn't faithful enough to the Hoffmann tale. a lot of people were upset because it featured children so prominently.
It sounds like it was a total disaster.
Well, much of it was a disaster. The transition between the real world and the magical world was clunky and abrupt. But what they did like was the score. They said Tchaikovsky's work was astonishingly rich and detailed inspiration. That's a direct quote. And they just thought it was beautiful. And so what Tchaikovsky did to sort of save himself in all of this was he made the Nutcracker Suite. And he took 8 of the best tunes from the ballet and presented them in an orchestral presentation. And people loved it. There's some apocryphal tales, you know, that go along with this. One story goes that Tchaikovsky was apparently in a bet with a friend who said that Tchaikovsky couldn't write a tune based on the notes of the scale in an octave in sequence. And Tchaikovsky said, well, you know, it doesn't matter whether they're in ascending or descending order, and was assured that they weren't. And this, they say, is how the adagio from the Grand Pas de Deux, which always follows the waltz, usually follows the Waltz of the Flowers. Another story about that is that his sister had died shortly before he started writing the ballet, and that his grief caused him to compose this, you know, sad descending scale for the adagio. One thing that's kind of interesting about it is Tchaikovsky's original score insisted on the use of the celesta, which was an instrument that he found out about in Paris, and he wanted it for the Sugar Plum Fairy, specifically for the Sugar Plum Fairy, because it's a sweet-sounding instrument, and she was a sweet sort of character. He also used toy instruments during the Christmas party scene, which was sort of fun. But he was very proud of it, and he wanted the music performed for the public before somebody else beat him to the celesta. So that was important to him. I don't know why the ballet suddenly became important and popular in the 1960s, but it has become so important that I've read somewhere that most of the major ballet companies make 40% of their revenue at Christmas time with the Nutcracker. Yes, it's amazing. So, I mean, that's one reason why we see it, you know, with supply and demand. I don't know which came first, the audience or the ballet. But the first North American production was in San Francisco. And people loved it so much that it has now become a tradition, and they do it every year. And everybody has a version of it. Balanchine made a version of it. Baryshnikov made a version of it. They're all different. They're all wonderful. They're all basically the same. But it has become, the music itself has become so much a part of our popular culture. In 1962, there was a boogie-woogie arrangement of the Marsh, entitled Nut Rocker. And it's been covered by Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Dropkick Murphys, the Brian Seltzer Orchestra, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Very popular. In 2014, Pentatonix released an a cappella arrangement of the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy.
Mm-hmm.
On television, and granted, most of these are children's shows, which I always thought was strange because it didn't seem like quite a children's story to me, but I was afraid of Drosselmeyer. But at any rate, The Magic School Bus, Courage the Cowardly Dog, of course, the Walt Disney House of Mouse, the Wonder Pets, the Care Bears. There's just, even Monty Python's Flying Circus has included a Nutcracker story or Nutcracker music. Even video games. In Tetris, there's, as background music, you can choose the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy or the Russian Dance. So it's very much a part of our culture. In 2009, Sarah Kaufman, who's a dance critic for the Washington Post, a Pulitzer Prize winner, she wrote a series of articles in which she expressed her unhappiness with the domination of the Nutcracker in American ballet companies. She felt that it stunted the creativity of the ballet world. And she says, where are this century's provocations, she says, has ballet become so entwined with its Nutcracker image, so fearfully wedded to unthreatening offerings, that it has forgotten how eye-opening and ultimately nourishing creative destruction can be? So she's not a fan. In 2010, Alistair McCauley, who is a dance critic for the New York Times, and he had previously said, hey, Sarah Kaufman, I don't agree with you. He further took that a bit further by writing the Nutcracker Chronicles, which is a series of blog articles that followed his journey around the United States, seeing different productions of the ballet. And he says, at one point he says, I am a European who lives in America, and I never saw any Nutcracker until I was 21. Since then, I've seen it many times. The importance of this ballet to America has become a phenomenon that surely says as much about this country as it does about this work of art. So this year, I'm running a Nutcracker marathon. So, you know, love it, hate it, in whatever form you find it, whether you look for it in its original form or in the adaptation, or you enjoy the ballet, or you just enjoy the suite of music. The Nutcracker is a tradition, and a seasonal tradition. And there's something to be said for traditions, and especially during times of change. We want to hold on to what is familiar when things around us are changing rapidly. So I'm for the Nutcracker, and I intend to see it this year, and I hope everyone else does too.
Well, certainly the Nutcracker, at least as important a tradition for us as A Christmas Carol is in the literary world.
Indeed.
As you mentioned, more than a handful of opportunities to see the Nutcracker coming up for anyone around the Wichita area.
I'm very excited about the hip-hop.
Oh, how could you not be?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Well, cool. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Sandra Moore Coleman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And for On Stage for KMUW, I'm Fletcher Powell.